You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. There was no Razorback football over the weekend, but there was still plenty of Razorback stuff going on. Ethan Westerman's going to join me today. He was in Hot Springs and Pine Bluff over the weekend watching the Razorback basketball team practice, their first open practices under Coach John Calipari. I know he's got a lot of insights into what he saw during those events. We'll talk a little bit later in the show with David Seifert from D1Baseball.com and Prep Baseball Report. He was in Fayetteville over the weekend as the Razorbacks played Oklahoma State in three different baseball scrimmages. They played Friday night in a nine-inning scrimmage, and then they played a couple of five-inning games as part of a doubleheader Saturday. Interested to get his thoughts on what he saw at Baum. We'll also talk about what we saw over the weekend from SEC football. LSU ranked number 8 as they come to Razorback Stadium this weekend for a Saturday night 6 o'clock kickoff between the Razorbacks and the Tigers. But we start with Ethan. Ethan joins us. He's not high above Markham Street this time as he was the last time that he was in Little Rock, but he joins us from his hotel in Little Rock as he's getting ready to you're on a basketball swing, right, Ethan? I mean, you were in Hot Springs, then you're in Pine Bluff, and later today you're headed down to Birmingham for SEC Basketball Media Day. It's like you're embedded with the team.
Yeah, I mean, the basketball team came down here for their tip-off tour is what they called it. I don't know. Mine isn't the tip-off tour, whatever I'm doing. It's some great safari because, you know, came down for Hot Springs and Pine Bluff, what they're doing. And then me and Bob Holt are darting for Birmingham this afternoon to get down there for Media Day. This is day 3 of 6 in a row, me and Bob on the road, just talking hoops and talking everything else around the sun. Bob is a good time on a trip like this. I'm getting a lot of Razorback history, so
he's a wealth of knowledge.
Great. Yeah, we just completed chapter 3 of Razorback football history, where we got through the 80s and 90s. I think we'll start the 2000s today.
One of my favorite things we've done with Bob is it was when the basketball team was in Buffalo for the NCAA tournament. I think that was the 22 season. That's when they went to San Francisco the next week, and I had Scotty Bordelon, who was working for us at the time. He just sat down after a game that Arkansas beat. I don't know if they beat New Mexico State or who they beat in that first round. But they sat down with Bob on the floor in Buffalo, and Bob just gave like 10 minutes of remembering covering the NCAA tournament, because he's probably covered 40-plus tournament games for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, he's a wealth of knowledge for sure. I mean, I'm learning a lot. It's a good time. I think Bob's enjoying this trip too. So we'll be down there in Birmingham later. But we did Hot Springs and Pine Bluff. Got to see the team and talked to Coach Calipari last night. We talked to Kenny Payne after Hot Springs. So we've gotten a couple different voices. Also talked to Carter Knox and Trevin Brazil after Hot Springs. So it was definitely worth our time.
So tell me, let's start with Hot Springs, because they played there Saturday night. They were at the what's the building called there?
The convention center. Bank OZK Arena.
Okay, so they're there. Pretty big crowd seemed like showed up for that one. Bigger crowd than they had in Pine Bluff. But what did you see Saturday night? And just kind of paint the picture for us being there, because unless you were there, you weren't able to experience what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, I think relatively big crowd. Like everybody maybe wanted to see it packed, see the state show that type of support. But, you know, on 12 days notice, it's really hard to get that many people aware and in the door, especially whenever you have a price point. Like, I think that the cheapest ticket was like $30 or something to go to these. So that's kind of a hard ask in 12 days, but it was a good crowd. You know, I'm from Hot Springs, so very familiar with that arena. And I graduated in there, played basketball tournaments in there. So it was pretty cool for me, honestly, just seeing something like that down there. I mean, it was listed on the schedule as a red-white scrimmage, but with the amount of, it doesn't seem like they have any serious injuries at all. None of them appear serious. It just appears like they're kind of dinged up and taking precaution this close to the season. But with that in mind, they just decided to not scrimmage and just do some drills. And basically, we just watched a practice. So I think we went from going to have a red-white game to just watch a practice. But they did go 5-on-5 live with some GAs, which these GAs that they have could be their own team. They're pretty good. But, yeah, it was just a glorified practice, to be honest. I feel like they looked better last night. I think in Pine Bluff it was more of just like a legit practice that we watched. I think Hot Springs was just kind of them figuring out how they wanted this to even look. It was a cool chance for fans to get to meet the players. It really, highlighted how well known the team is across the state. Just like these guys coming down there and everybody's so excited to see them. It was a cool scene just seeing how they were the people who were in there were having the time of their life, it seemed like.
So the players who didn't participate, Nelly Davis, Cashmere Chavis, Aduthiero, Melo Sanchez, and then you wrote that Jonas Adu was limited to mostly non-contact drills. But just to kind of reiterate what you said, Calipari, when he spoke to the media on October the 1st, he said that they had some players banged up, said that they're trying to get them healthy for Lipscomb, not so much healthy for maybe the exhibition games they're going to play or any of these open events.
Exactly. And even last night, Aduthiero and Jonas Adu started participating. Like, they didn't do much of anything or the in Hot Springs. I don't think Aduthiero did anything in Hot Springs, but Jonas did. But anyway, those two, they were back in the mix last night. Like, they were doing pretty much everything but the live 5-on-5. But Nelly Davis, Cash Chavis, and obviously Lawson Blake's hurt. He's going to be out. But those three just didn't do anything. But yeah, I mean, we asked him again last night, when he kind of is wanting those guys back. And he made it clear, like, he's not going to risk their season health against Kansas if he doesn't have to. I think he views it as this is a chance for some of these freshmen to just get thrown right into the fire of playing Kansas. So, it seems to me like they're eyeing that Lipscomb. That whenever the games count toward your record is when they're going to have these guys for sure back to full strength.
Now, I think we've got some video B-roll to play underneath this. I'm not sure if we do or not, but we'll find out. But just kind of in Hot Springs, you shot some video and you put it on our website at wholehogsports.com. Just kind of explain to us some of the drills that they were going through and some of the things that they did.
Yeah, I mean, they did your typical stuff that anybody who's ever played basketball, like I was watching their opening drills. I was like, well, I've done that plenty of times. They're doing your typical full court layups, passing back and forth between the lane lines and layups, and they did like, your full court weaves. They did all that typical stuff, just getting up and down the court, and that's so standard for basketball. I feel like if anything though, Calipari, what he did is he stopped yesterday in the middle of it and made it a point to the entire crowd, like if we see these guys not going full speed in this, we're starting over basically, and we're gonna run. He's very, very focused right now about their speed and then being. He wants a fast-paced team. I mean, that's typical of his teams. But he really in those drills is just looking for them to be getting, I think, better conditioning. He also stops it on things like that on those type of drills if somebody catches it with one hand. He stopped the Pine Bluff crowd last night and was like, "We aren't going to play our butts off for 39 minutes and somebody try and catch a pass with one hand in the last minute and us lose a game because of that." He said, "We're going to stop if we don't catch it with two hands." And so he's just very detail oriented, wanting to see kind of, I don't know if perfection's the word, but effort. He wants to see effort nonstop, which I mean, that's every coach. But so we saw those type of drills. And then they kind of eased more into, your typical 5-on-5 live stuff. They did a little bit of shooting drills. It was just honestly a pretty standard practice. And then it amped up a little bit last night in Pine Bluff. It seemed like there was a little bit added intensity.
We saw where Calipari here, as we're watching the video, he took the microphone and it seems like he was kind of like an MC as this was going on, Ethan.
Oh yeah, the way that Bob and I classified it at is we called it a running commentary practice. It was, you'll watch 5 minutes uninterrupted, and then all of a sudden Cal will grab the mic and go on for 30 minutes to. Or 30, not 30 minutes, 30 seconds to a minute. He could talk for 30 minutes if he wanted. He sure doesn't know how to keep a conversation going. But he would stop and give a little insight. So yeah, that's kind of what we deemed it, a running commentary, a practice. He did. The funniest one was they had been missing quite a few threes just early in like maybe the shot clock of these 5-on-5 stuff. And they started actually getting in a rhythm of just like moving the ball around, cutting, getting guys open, for layups and stuff. And he stopped after Trevin Brazil made a layup off of a pretty nice pass inside. And he asked the crowd, "Would you rather see a three or that play?" And then the whole place just goes, "That play." And then he asks it again, "Would you rather see a three or that play?" And then they scream it. And then He does the same thing like 3 minutes later. He was definitely trying to get a point across to the team. Like, quit shooting threes. You can get open layups. So that was kind of funny.
And then in Pine Bluff last night, Bob Holt wrote about this on our website. Right now, there's it's the front page of our website. Arkansas basketball legends make appearance in Pine Bluff for tip-off tour practice. There were a lot of big names who made it out to that one in Pine Bluff. U.S. Reed was there. Todd Day, Andrew Lang, Ken Biley, who was on the national championship team, Chris Walker, Ernie Murray from another Final Four team. And a lot of these guys, Ethan, made it. They made long trips to go back to Pine Bluff. All of them, for the most part, have got some connection to that town. But, I mean, I was reading where a couple of them came in from Atlanta. Ken Biley made an 8.5-hour drive up from Houston, where he's living now. Todd Day lives over in Little Rock. And so it was important for them, and I know Todd Day's not from Pine Bluff, but it was important for a lot of these Pine Bluff natives to come back to see the Razorbacks there. For people who don't understand, Pine Bluff Convention Center at one point in time was kind of like War Memorial Stadium is for the Razorback football team. They would play, they would also play at the Barton Coliseum most years, but I think they went about 15, 17 years somewhere in there playing at least one game every season at the Pine Bluff Convention Center. Obviously, one of the great wins in program history was when they beat Michael Jordan and number one North Carolina there on a Sunday afternoon in, I think, 1984. Charles Ballantyne's shot beat North Carolina. So it was a big deal to these guys who grew up in Pine Bluff, who probably grew up going to Razorback games at the Convention Center, for them to see the Razorbacks come back to their hometown.
Yeah, it was that's what stood out to me, is just how much it meant to a lot of these alums and the fans down there for them to go to Pine Bluff. I felt like I was walking into like kind of Razorback history just by being down there and seeing how much they have dedicated in that arena to some of these games that, you know, happened decades ago. But those guys who got to be the honorary captains, I mean, you could just tell how much that meant to them. That city, of course, both of these, I'm from Hot Springs and then went to Pine Bluff for that as well. I went to both of them, and I just sensed in Pine Bluff it maybe meant a little bit more just to everybody. It just, the pride that they took in getting to have the team down there, I mean, they went really, on 12 days notice, they went above and beyond to get that thing how they had it. They had a great, just presentation ahead of the game with the mayor, with the event planner of the convention center there, and just, you could tell they were just beaming with pride with how much it meant to them. I know afterward, too, on the way out of the gym, you know, Bob and I are, we're always shutting down gyms, but we're a few of the last ones out, and there's just three ladies who, wrapping up, finishing cleaning and concession stand stuff, and they just asked how they were just asking how we thought the event went, and we're like, oh, I thought it was great, like, could tell how much effort y'all put into this, and then Bob complimented the food and said it was some of the best food that he's had in a while. I mean, it was some good stuff. And they, the ladies were like, that just gives us chills. Like, that's what they said. It gives us chills knowing that this happened. And so I just think it meant a lot to that community. And that's what Calipari said. He said, you know, it didn't get the attendance and crowd maybe that we want to see it packed. But he said, but he did say, I think it accomplished exactly what we wanted to get accomplished, which was giving hope to some of these cities that haven't had stuff there in a while.
And part of this, too, part of what they were trying to accomplish, or part of the reason they were even able to, have these events off campus, there had to be some community outreach to it. And I know you wrote a little bit about this, the work they did with the Samaritan's Feet, both in Hot Springs and Pine Bluff.
Yeah, and I wasn't prepared for the answer I got from Calipari yesterday. Whenever I asked him like,
said it was the most detailed that he was at any point during the Q&A, right?
Oh, probably. I mean, he got in the weeds. I just asked him, because I was just curious, you know, what made him choose Samaritan's Feet? Like, what's his, I know he's been doing this for a while with them, but like, what makes that something so important to him? I probably got a 10-minute answer back. I don't know, that might be exaggerating, but it was long. Basically, the Samaritan's Feet, what they do is they go to, you know, these YMCAs, and they wash children and their families' feet and provide them new shoes afterward. These are children who maybe come from not the best financial background, and to where it means a lot. It's really, the washing of the feet is more just really symbolic of, the players humbling themselves to do that for a kid that, you know, hasn't had that much probably care shown to them just in a while. Or just doesn't have the financial resources. So it was pretty cool to see them do that. But then he went on to talk about just like how he loves that organization, blah, 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 blah. And then just went off about how he wants those type of things to be what marks his players the down the road is there. That's how they keep on being in the NBA. He mentioned that six of the eight, I forget the name of the award, but it's basically the NBA's Community Service Award. Six of the past eight winners have played for him, I think is what he said. And so he wants them to learn along the way the importance of being present where their whatever their community is, of being there and making difference. He also mentioned that in the winter, he said something they're going to do is they'll pick 12 families that really need that otherwise probably wouldn't have a great Christmas, and they're going to go crazy making it the best Christmas of their life. He said part of it is always paying for 2 months of their rent. So that's a huge deal. But yeah, it was cool. He gave a long answer. If anybody wants to check it out, it's all over the internet, video from that last night. So,
You said he had a pretty humorous moment with Bob too.
oh my goodness. Yeah, Bob, I forget what even. Oh, what it was is Calipari went from Hot Springs to took a private jet or whatever, charter or whatever, to Pittsburgh for a clinic yesterday morning, and then headed back down to Pine Bluff. Like he's just bang bang bang. He's so loyal to his commitments. I've learned as far as if he tells somebody he's going to be somewhere, he'll make it happen, and then he'll get back. But anyway, Bob was just pointing out like, hey, we're the same age, and travel takes a lot out of me. Like, how do you stay? He was basically asking like, how do you keep going around like all this and staying on your feet? And all Bob could get out was, we're the same age. And Cal said, whoa, 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 hold up. And made Bob stand up in front of everybody. And he said, come up here, and stood next to Cal. He said, which one of us is older? And everybody pointed at Bob and said, oh, it's him, it's Bob. And he said, okay, go sit back down. And then Bob finished his question. But Calipari actually is older, we learned.
Yeah, about
So
9 months, right?
Bob had a point, but Cal definitely did not like being told he was the same age as Bob.
But my favorite Bob Cal moment was whenever he was at Kentucky, and they were at the SEC Media Days where you guys are going here in a couple of days, and he asked him a question and kind of framed Arkansas into it, and Calipari said, "Why are you always asking me about Arkansas?" And Bob retorts, "Why are you always talking about Kentucky?"
Yeah,
Kind of fun
it
there.
was. They definitely. I picked up on that. Cal knows who Bob is. I mean,
All
it's
the
just like
coaches know who he is. It's
all the coaches
funny.
know who he is.
They don't do this anymore, but used to, they would bring the visiting coaches into the media room at Bud Walton Arena. And whether it be Rick Stansbury or Billy Donovan or Ben Howland or whoever, I mean, they all knew him. I mean, I don't know if it was from SEC Media Days or what the connection there was, but I mean, it was always, "Hey Bob, how are you doing?" So, I mean, all these coaches know Bob. He's a
Yeah,
pretty unforgettable character.
Cal and him had some camaraderie last night. I mean, they were just bouncing off of each other a little bit. It was Bob said this was on the same answer about his travel. Cal was like, "And guess where I have to go in 2 days?" And then Bob goes, "You get to go to Birmingham," like instead of have to. And Cal goes, "No, I have to." He said, Cal goes, "If I wouldn't get fined, I would not go." Basically, he's like, "I do not want to go to Birmingham," but.
Calipari's keeping a pretty busy schedule right now. He spoke in Rogers at the summit the other day. Then he flew down to Little Rock to talk to Little Rock Catholic. Then he was in Hot Springs on Friday. Like you said, went to Pittsburgh. Then he was in Pine Bluff at Birmingham. So this is the part of the year for coaches leading into the season where they go do a lot of outreach. I don't know if outreach, but basically just they do a lot of public speaking events, and we're seeing that with John Calipari. We got much more to get to today on our podcast. We're going to talk about SEC football and what we saw over the weekend here in just a minute. Of course, a little bit later, we'll talk about that Arkansas-Oklahoma State baseball exhibition series as well. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, We are Design.
Tigers time on offense. Now they'll motion Lacy back to the right side of the formation. Here's the snap. Pump fake by Nussmeier. He's going to throw towards the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Fighting Tigers! Tigers Woo! Win! Tigers win! In the right corner of the end zone. 25-yard strike to Kyren Lacy. And the Tigers indeed walk it off here at Tiger Stadium with a 29-26 victory in overtime. And now the students have stormed the field. What an incredible.
That's Chris Blair from the LSU Sports Radio Network. LSU beating Ole Miss 29-26 in overtime the other night at Death Valley. Chris Blair, one of my favorite play-by-play guys, by the way. I mean, he sounds, Ethan, like South Louisiana. He does a wonderful job. For them, not just on football, but on their baseball broadcast as well.
Yeah, I've listened to some of his baseball before. In the SEC tournament, I remember I listened to him. Was it a Hagen-Smith-Paul Skeens duel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in Hoover.
I listened to him for that game because I was not around a TV. Pretty electric stuff from him.
Yeah, he does a great job. Death Valley delivered the other night, and now you get LSU coming in on a big emotional high after beating Ole Miss. They move up five places in the AP poll. They're number eight. Coming into Razorback Stadium this weekend. A little nugget here. It's the first time ever that Arkansas has played back-to-back games against top 10 teams in Fayetteville. It's never happened before. They've had some moments where they played top 10 teams back-to-back in Arkansas, but in those cases it was a game in Fayetteville, a game in Little Rock, and they've had, you know, some other instances where they played top 10 teams back-to-back. It might be a regular season finale and then a bowl game, or maybe the SEC championship and then a bowl game. But this is so kind of a little bit of a first. You think about 89 years of the AP poll and 89 years of games, or 87 years of games at Razorback Stadium. It's never happened there. So a little bit of a first this weekend as LSU comes in. I thought, and everybody looks at this game different, I thought LSU and Ole Miss both played really well the other night. You know, I think both of them probably feel like they left some points on the field. I know Ole Miss does early in the game. They had a touchdown that was dropped early. They had a field goal that was missed early in that game. I think they had a turnover, on LSU's side of the field. So they were kicking themselves that the game was so close at halftime. But LSU made some plays. Ole Miss didn't make the plays that they needed to. But to me, it didn't look so much like maybe Ole Miss played down to its competition or anything like that. I just thought it was two good football teams duking it out on Saturday night. And LSU, there's some consistency questions with them. I think LSU does have a tendency to play down to competition. We saw it against UCLA. I think we even saw it to a certain extent with their game against Nicholls State. But one thing I do feel like Brian Kelly's teams have done at LSU over the 3 years is that they seem like they get quite a bit better from game one to game 12. And I kind of feel like you're seeing that with LSU right now.
I'd agree, because I was not impressed early in the year with what they were doing. I'm still not quote-unquote sold on them. Like, I think a number eight ranking right now was more indicative of kind of the parity of all of college football, that they've been able to, you know, sneak their way all the way up there again. But they have, nobody can not deny they've gotten better since their loss to USC. I think that it's a big challenge for Arkansas. I know coming off a bye week and everything is going to help with the health, but I mean, LSU seems like they're hitting a little bit of a stride. That was a big win for them. I mean, it was one of those games that you kind of, I think, you look back at the end and you're like you said, Ole Miss kind of kicked itself to lose that game. But it also just demonstrated, like, the ability, like, a good team finds a way to win even whenever maybe they weren't the better team for all the game. And I feel like that's what LSU did. They found a way, and they had an electric environment too. I don't know if they should have stormed the field for that win, but hey, I guess more power to you these days. Ole Miss will get a check. I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, Ole Miss will get a check. I don't know how much. I don't know if it's $100,000 or $250,000 for LSU. They did announce it yesterday. I didn't take time to look at how much it was, but Ole Miss is not the first team that we've seen collapse in Death Valley. I mean, Saturday night there really is something magical about that stadium. And it just seems like, I don't know, the 102,000, they get to you when you're on the field. I've seen Arkansas collapse there. I've seen Ole Miss collapsed there plenty of times. I feel like we've seen that Ole Miss LSU game in that stadium many times. And again, you just, I was looking here since 2000, LSU has a record of 138-23 at home. And I think it's like 119-15 or something like that in the games at night. There's just something about that stadium that is really intimidating for teams. And I know Arkansas is probably pretty happy that they get LSU at home this year and not have to go down there.
For sure. It's actually interesting you saying those records for LSU at home, because Arkansas's probably had a lot more success than a lot of, because I can remember off the top of my head several Arkansas, like, I mean, Cam Little win, the Darren McFadden game.
Yeah, they beat him in 15 there too. Yeah, they've won there a few times in this century.
Yeah. But I mean, like you said, there's been plenty of collapses too. I mean, they played pretty well there last year, even though they got beat, but that stadium is, you see just raw video footage, like, you know, shot from somebody's phone. And it's just, you're like, if this is shot from somebody's phone, like, how electric was it? Like, I don't know. It's not even the best video footage, but you get a sense of just how intimidating of an environment it is.
It was a great day for football Saturday. You had LSU beating Ole Miss in overtime. That happened just minutes after Tennessee beat Florida in overtime. Tennessee had to come back and beat the Gators. They were down 10-0 at halftime in that game at Neyland Stadium. Earlier in the day, Alabama and South Carolina had a thriller where Alabama just shot itself in the foot and left itself with about two toes. I mean, it was just mistake after mistake after mistake that helped South Carolina stay in that game. Really good day of football. Even Georgia, Mississippi State was a little bit more entertaining than I think people thought it would be. Georgia was never really in danger of losing that game, but it only ended up being a 10-point win, and I'm sure they're pretty upset with that. And then you had Vanderbilt going on the road to Kentucky and winning again. Vanderbilt now just a couple of wins away from bowl eligibility. They've got the exact same record as Arkansas. They're 4-2, 2-1 overall. And I think that those are kind of the two teams, Ethan, you and I were talking about this yesterday. Those are kind of the two teams I think that are in the driver's seat as far as maybe when we look at the end of the year saying these are the SEC teams that they improved their win total more than any other SEC team from a year ago.
For sure. I think that those are by far the two top candidates for the turnaround team. I think that Vanderbilt, it's crazy. You go from winning two games at Vanderbilt last year. I think they lost their final 10 after starting 2-0, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. To being sitting here at 4-2. I mean, their season could end right now, and it they could lose the rest of their games, and it's still such a better Vanderbilt team than last year. It's Arkansas. You look at them, and I think Arkansas still has maybe the tougher path ahead to get to the most improved win total than Vanderbilt, considering Vandy won two last year. But, you know, far and away, those are the two teams that have, I think, proven that they're not the same squad that they were last year.
There were two games in Dallas this weekend that I thought just was the perfect opponent to show everything that was wrong with a team. It happened yesterday in the Cowboys-Lions game, and then it happened Saturday with Texas and Oklahoma. And we've been saying it for weeks. OU just does not look like a very good football team. And Texas exposed them in a big way Saturday, beating them 34-3. It's the first Red River SEC game. Texas is number one this week. Oregon's number two. But Texas, they get a big challenge this week when Georgia comes to Austin. But based on what I see right now, and maybe, you know, Saturday with Georgia there changes my tune, I think Georgia's got a good team, but I'm not, like, thinking they're this unbeatable team. Obviously, Alabama beat them. Texas looks really good. They look like a legitimate number one team.
Yeah, I don't think there's much question right now that Texas has been the most, I'd say, impressive team with their collective, what they've done this year in college football. Anybody who doesn't rank them number one right now, I don't know how they think another team would
the argument's the schedule. You know, the argument's the schedule, and their schedule's not great. I mean, they haven't played as many Power 4 teams as everybody else. In fact, in the ratings that we do, we track how many Power 4 teams they've played, and Texas has played the fewest Power 4 teams of anybody else in the SEC. So they're going to have to prove themselves, I think, more in terms of just playing teams their own size over the back half of the season than anybody else in the SEC. But they went to Michigan, and they clobbered Michigan. They did what you would expect them to do in that game. Mississippi State, I think it was close for a half, and then with the backup quarterback, they pulled away and beat Mississippi State the way you would expect them to do. And then, you know, the Red River game, a lot of times it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's one of those games where you literally can throw the records out because those two teams just they bring something different to the Cotton Bowl. But, I mean, they beat OU the way I thought that they should beat OU that doesn't have an offense at all.
That's what I'm saying is I'm not, like, necessarily there. I know there's the for who should be number one. Maybe some people would argue their schedule. But are you seriously going to tell me that you think that if Oregon and Texas play today that you would pick Oregon over them? Like, Texas has just been so dominant is my thing.
Are they playing in Autzen or are they playing in Austin?
I don't care.
If they're playing in Autzen, I may take Oregon. That's a tough place to play.
Yeah, but Texas, I'm just saying Texas has looked very, very good this year. And, I mean, to my knowledge, they weren't out there against the Sooners flanking out their offensive linemen like the Lions got to do against the Cowboys last night, trying to get the linemen involved in the pass game. Theirs was a more humble 34-3 win. It was like you said, equal dismantling of an opponent.
SEC teams in the AP poll this week mentioned Texas is number one, Georgia 5, Alabama is 7, LSU 8. Tennessee, even though they won, they dropped another 3 spots down to number 11. I don't think the pollsters are very impressed with the way the Volunteers have looked the last couple of weeks. A&M still moving up. They're number 14 now. Ole Miss fell to 18, which I thought was a pretty harsh tumble. I mean, they were one play away from beating LSU on its home field, but they fall to number 18. They're the highest-ranked 2-loss team. And Missouri, they beat UMass up on Saturday up in Massachusetts, and they're up to number 19 in the poll this week. Mentioned Georgia, Texas, another big high-profile matchup this weekend. Alabama goes to Tennessee, and it feels like the Alabama-Tennessee game is kind of maybe a 2-loss team gets into the playoff, but I would not feel good about my playoff chances if I was the team that lost that game in Knoxville.
For sure, because you're looking at both of their – resumes at this point, and one has a loss to Vandy, one to Arkansas, and you know those are losses that if you're looking at a strong 2-loss team, you might need your 2 losses might need to be, you know, like for Georgia's sake, like Alabama, Texas, and you'll still get in. I'm not sure, you know, if you're looking at Alabama at the end of the year, if they have a Vandy and a Tennessee loss, getting swept by the state of Tennessee, how much that would. You know, I do think that the chips will fall that if you're a 2-loss SEC team, you'll probably get in my opinion. But it is for, you know, if you are on the fringe at the end, that is a game that you look at and you're wondering if the loser can recover. I also think, I mean, that was what killed Ole Miss is now they have on their resume Kentucky and LSU losses, which that's going to be hard for them to make the playoff and now. They probably have to run the table.
Well, they've still got to play some good teams too.
Yeah, so... 2 losses, it is better than, you know, with the 4-team playoff. If you're in the grave right now as far as your college football playoff chances go, but now these 2-loss teams at least have a chance. You just got to probably run the table.
You know, like for Ole Miss, if their 2 losses were to say Texas and Alabama, and I don't know if they play Alabama this year. I think they might. I know they play Texas. They play Georgia. I know they play Georgia. Say they lose to Georgia and Alabama. Okay, you might get in as a 2-loss team. Kentucky and LSU, I don't know. Although I will say this, I feel like if Georgia beats Texas in Austin, that's a potential preview of the SEC championship game in Atlanta down the line. If Georgia gets to 2 losses, it's going to be a lot tougher for them to get back into the championship game conversation. You know who's undefeated with Texas right now in the SEC standings? It's a couple teams. It's A&M and LSU. A&M and LSU are kind of sneaky right there, putting themselves in position to have a November to remember.
I'll go ahead and point this one out. Don't look ahead too fast, but you look at A&M's schedule. If they can beat LSU, which, I mean, that's not a given at all, but they can get past LSU, their schedule looks like they are made to go play at Texas in the finale of the season and then meet them in Atlanta a week later or however many weeks. Is it a one-week break?
Yeah, it's like 1 week later.
Yeah, so that's what the schedule looks like. You look at A&M's schedule, and it's not that daunting.
So Texas A&M, LSU, a couple of teams to watch. We'll talk a lot more about Arkansas LSU leading up to the game on Saturday in our podcast to come throughout the week. Ethan, we're going to let you get out. We know you got to hit the road to Birmingham. Have safe travel, and we'll talk to you when you're down there.
Sounds good.
All right, when we come back, David Seifert from D1 Baseball and Prep Baseball Report joins me to talk about the Razorbacks and Oklahoma State baseball scrimmage over the weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to talk with David Seifert of D1Baseball.com and Prep Baseball Report here in just a moment. I want to tell you first about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We're also brought to you today by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas played Oklahoma State in three games over the weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. Friday night, the Razorbacks won 8-1 in nine innings. It was a traditional game Friday night. Saturday, they played a couple of five-inning games. Oklahoma State won the first one 6-3. The Razorbacks won the finale 7-1. David Seifert was there, and he joins us now. David, I assume you had a safe trip home.
I did. I stopped at Missouri State in Springfield. They were playing a game Saturday night, so I stopped, got a little bit more baseball, but made it safely home afterwards.
You can never get enough fall baseball, right?
No, not the games that we play now. Maybe 5 years ago is a little different, but now, yeah, there's a good game around every corner, it seems like.
So you and I were talking in the press box Saturday. I did not get to see the game Friday night. I've read all about it, but I had another commitment Friday night. But from the sounds of it, Arkansas, that front line pitching that they threw out there Friday night against Oklahoma State, they threw seven pitchers like Gabe Gackle and Gage Wood and Landon Beidelsheese and Zach Root. And you can go on down the list, the pitchers that you really expect to see in starting roles or maybe closing roles or big-time middle inning roles, they looked really, really good.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, they led off with Gackle, and Gackle's barring craziness, he's a first-rounder in 2026 when he's eligible. I mean, he was up to 98, and it's just not a normal 98. It's a firm, it's an electric 98. He's got two different breaking balls. I know he's only, 6 foot, 5'11", whatever, but he's a special, special talent. So led off with him, and then, like, the other names you mentioned, it just kind of – it never got bad. It was arm after arm of – I know I say draft guys because that's kind of my perspective, but really good college pitchers too, guys that win you – guys that take you to Omaha and give you a chance to win the Natty.
You know, you saw Arkansas pitch against Oklahoma State down in Arlington back in February. They lose some pitchers off of that staff. Obviously, they lose Hagan Smith, who just blew us all away down there that weekend against Oregon State, and some others who contributed last year. But it feels like they've got a real good core of pitchers back.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to replace Hagan Smith. I mean, let's face it, he's a generational guy. I mean, I caught him. I've been scouting coaching, scouting for over 30 years. And I said at a time I saw him pitch against Oregon State at Globe Life. And that was the best performance I've ever seen ever in my life of a college pitcher. And he was just phenomenal. But with all that said, Tigert was solid, Molina was solid, but I think this staff's going to be different. It's going to have a bona fide ace with Gackle at the top. But then, I mean, you got Root, you got Gage Wood, who was good. You got Beidelsheese. I'm probably butchering his last name or whatever, but to me, he looks like more of a high leverage reliever, and it was only one inning. Mm-hmm. Threw one inning, struck out a couple. Didn't really see much of a second or a third pitch, but I mean, working with Hobbs another 6 months, he'll be there. He'll be a legit rotation guy. Gibbler was solid. I know he's just a freshman or whatever, but there are very few freshman arms in the entire country, let alone a left-hander that has three pitches for strikes, throws 92, 94, just has his type of presence. You know, Fouch and Wiggins on the back end. But then you guys roll out Lance Davis. You and I saw him pitch on what Saturday's second mm-hmm. game. I forget mm-hmm. which game was. That day was a blur for me. But I mean, that guy is the real deal too. So as usual, you Razorbacks have just a plethora of really talented arms. But again, they're separated because they can also pitch. You know, at the end of the day, you can throw as hard as you want, but if you can't pitch, you know, there's not as much there, and they all did it. That was just a great game to watch.
Gibbler and Wiggins, they were kind of the stars of the last draft class. Arkansas didn't lose any pitching from this last or this high school class that they signed for 2024. They didn't lose any of them to the draft over the summer. Wiggins is one of the highest rated players to get on campus anywhere this year. I think he was ranked number 79 by at least one publication that does draft rankings. Gibbler was a real highly rated prospect too. You mentioned Davis, Luke Williams, a left-hander from Owosso. Those were a couple of others that, you know, I was told, you know, in the summer that, hey, there's some teams that are interested in these guys in the days leading up to the draft. It's just going to be a matter of if they can get their number right, and they didn't, and they're here. And we were talking about this Saturday, David, the fact that it just seems like Arkansas's got this, I don't know what you would call it. I mean, it's almost like an embarrassment of riches that they get from the high school ranks in terms of pitching. And then, you know, Matt Hobbs gets him for 2 or 3 years, and he's really got a machine rolling over there from a pitching perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a good term. You can call it is an embarrassment of riches, and Matt certainly knows what to do with him once he gets him, that's for sure. And, you know, just walking through the facilities before the game on Friday, I mean, you've got it all there. You've got outstanding facilities with the latest technology that's going to help these guys. You got an outstanding pitching coach, great place to play, huge support. I mean, it is amazing, but at the same time, I mean, you can kind of see why they come there and develop and come out well. And even the guy, not to try to one up you here, but even Steele Eaves was impressive for me. He was, I think he threw second in the first game on Saturday. I mean, that guy was 92, 93 with sink and a good changeup. So the list of talented freshman arms goes on and on.
Yeah, Eaves was another one that Matt Hobbs mentioned to us about a week or two ago when we had him here on our podcast. I want to go back to Gackle and the performance that he had, because it wasn't just the fact that he was dominant. It was against the type of hitters that he just blew them away. You've got Nolan Schubert, who is probably maybe a first-rounder in 2025 draft, a returning All-American for them. You've got Aiden Miola, who's been a multi-year starter at Oklahoma State, who's done really good things for them. I mean, he just looked really good against quality hitters.
Yeah, he looked that way, obviously, last year as well. And I saw him this summer for the USA Collegiate National Team as well. And same guy. And that's one thing that's very impressive. Every time I've seen him, at least, he's been that same guy. You know, upper 90s with 3 pitches for strikes or 4 pitches for strikes, competitive. You know, he's got that diving changeup and 2+ breaking balls to go along with that 97, 98. Mm-hmm. And it's high spin stuff. And I know that's the deal. You know, you want spin rate, you want IVB, you got all those fancy statistics now that we used to call ride and sink and things like that. But I mean, this guy's got it all. He's a bulldog. You know, he's a special, special talent.
From a position standpoint, I'm going to ask who stood out to you, but I want to ask you specifically about Brent Iredell first, because every time that I've talked to people over there or I've gone over there and watched practice, it's either my eyes have told me this guy stands out or a coach has said he's got a great swing. I know you were pretty high on him, right, coming out of New Mexico Junior College. I think I read where you had him the number 5 JUCO prospect coming out of the JUCO ranks this last year. What is it that he does so well?
He just takes the bat to the ball. I mean, we can, you know, his swing is, it's, I think it's in the eye of the beholder. For me, he works a little uphill and there's some stiffness, especially at the start of the swing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Aloy has stiffness at the start of the swing. It's better this year than last, but I mean, you can have that and still be a great hitter. But I think Iredell overcomes everything just because, number one, he's strong, but most importantly, he just has great barrel awareness. I mean, he knows exactly where that barrel's at. And you missed Friday's game, like you mentioned. He barreled 5 balls. He went 4 for 4 with a sac fly, and every ball was just hit on the button. Mm-hmm. And then I know Saturday he still hit well. He didn't hit as well as Friday because it's hard to top, which, you know, 5 for 5, 5 barreled balls. But yeah, he was super impressive. And he just continued what he did at New Mexico Junior College last year. He's in his original, as you know, just an Australian guy, kind of in that whole Travis Bazzana mode. You know, they're coming from everywhere. And Arkansas probably has the next great Aussie.
What about just the lineup as a whole? What stood out to you? I'll tell you one little nugget that stood out to me was Saturday. Not every one of them was for a hit. Some of them, you know, like a second baseman made a great play on a line drive. But I think I had five different Arkansas players on Saturday who had exit velocities of at least 105.
I haven't looked at that yet. I know the screen was, you know, kind of down our row there or whatever, and I was going back and forth between the field and press box. So I actually didn't catch that thing until, like, the second to last inning of the second game on Saturday. But my eyes were telling me they were barreling a lot of balls. But I believe it, 105. Mm-hmm. I definitely believe it. And that definitely stood out, you know, with the lineup. Everybody hits the ball hard. Everybody has strength. Everybody has bat speed. But really just what impressed me was not only the depth. I mean, you have a lot of different choices for the middle of the order. Like, we talked about Helfrich. I said Aloy earlier. You know, Maxwell is just a total polished hitter, the transfer from TCU. But I think he of all of them, I mean, they're all good, but he of all of them, just that polished bat, he's going to give you stability there. He's been there and done it before. He may not have the greatest raw power, but he's got great bat to ball. He's going to drive some gaps and hit a few home runs, especially when the park is playing small like it did there on that first game, especially on Saturday. But Maxwell really just solidifies everything in my mind. And then some guys like Diggs didn't even play. You know, he's out injured with his shoulder. And there's, you know, a couple other guys I left impressed with. Koziel really didn't do much. The Vandy transfer, he really didn't do much. I think he went 0-for-4, but he's going to hit. He hit for Vanderbilt as a true freshman. Bowles put some good swings on balls. I know he hasn't had, you know, much opportunity in his career, but he's a good player. And then Brenton Clark, and then Holland. I know Holland is a two-way guy right now, but, man, that's a multi-talented, multi-tooled, athletic guy that's going to develop and become something special too.
Yeah, Holland had a big home run late in the final game on Saturday that kind of blew it open. Aloy, because I know the Cahillo's here too. There's another publication out there that's got him as a potential first-round pick, and you and I were talking about what are his qualifications to be a first-round pick, and you were giving me some interesting insights into what you think scouts might be looking for that could be the difference between going in the first round and, you know, maybe being later first day, early second day.
Well, I think that what stands out for him, he is a middle infielder, and I think last year was kind of looked upon like he's a shortstop that's going to have to move to second base in pro ball. And I think this year he's just cleaned up some things. Just his actions are smoother. He's always had enough arm strength. He's always had really good hands. But I think the belief now, at least from what Myers showed me, and he just played the first two games of that series, obviously, that he can stay at shortstop or at least has a better than 50% chance of staying there. So that raises his value to day one. Not that it wasn't maybe the back end of day one before, but now he's middle day one. So if he stays at shortstop, produces, and then like we discussed, he struck out 20 or 21% of the time last season. If he can just continue to develop, you know, continue that batting average, continue to produce that power and just lower that strikeout rate to shoot 17%, all of a sudden he is a first rounder because he not only passes the eye test, passes the tool test, passes the future, where do I profile, what position do I profile in the future to, but then he has the analytics of a good strikeout rate, but a much better strikeout rate than over 20%. So that's a first rounder you're looking at the end of the day.
It may be unfair to ask this right now because, you know, you've approached these scrimmages differently than you approach a real game weekend. But based on what you saw, I mean, do you see holes in Arkansas that would keep them from being a championship contender? Or does this look like one of those well-rounded teams that can compete with anybody?
Yeah, I mean, now what we saw on Friday night, you know, those seven arms, I mean, those are elite arms. So at the end of the day, how many arms do you really throw in the spring? I mean, how many guys accumulate, you know, more than 20 innings? And it's probably seven or eight. So you definitely have the arms. From what I saw, you definitely have the bats. And then the thing we haven't talked about yet is I think it's just a much more dynamic lineup, at least the one that I saw in Global Life. I mean, you got Davlon at the top. Mm-hmm. He's got speed. He's got power. He's learning how to play center field. I know he's played there a little in the past, but he's still kind of converting. I saw average arm, average defender, average range, but I'm sure that's going to improve as you move forward. But even if he doesn't stick in the leadoff spot, and I'm not saying he won't, I'm just saying if he doesn't, how about Justin Thomas, the left fielder hit ninth? I mean, there's another good option for leadoff. He's got speed. He's got power. He's a plus defender in the outfield. I mean, I think he sticks. He takes the bat to the ball. So you not only have a deep middle of the order, you have some guys interchangeable at the top. And then you also had guys laying down bunts, like Logan Maxwell bunted for a base hit in the first game on Saturday. And then there were handfuls of other, you know, guys bunting for hits. I don't know how many stolen bases there were in the series by Arkansas, but I would say it was at least 6 or 7 or 8. And I think that might be a difference maker for the Razorbacks too. So I hate to see, I don't see any weakness. Really the only weakness I see is injuries, but that's the same for any team. Mm-hmm. And I hate to even mention that, but that's just the reality of the sport. I mean, so, you know, a couple guys go down here and there or whatever, or a couple guys don't come back from injury. I know a few guys are nursing injuries still there. But really that's the only thing I think slowing this team down. I was super impressed.
Before you get out of here, I want to ask you about Missouri State, because they're going to be on Arkansas' schedule a couple of times next year. Arkansas goes up to Springfield once. They come to Fayetteville once. It's obviously the first season without Keith Gutton there in probably about 50 years. What did you see from them Saturday night?
They're an exciting offensive team. They really are. On the mound, they just kind of threw some middle-of-the-road guys. Now, again, it was just 9 innings. You know, in the fall, I'm not sure who's out, who didn't pitch, things mm-hmm. of that nature. I didn't really research any of that. But yet, hopefully I'm pronouncing his name right. But Bogenpohl at the top, that dude is unreal. He's 6'6". He leads off. He plays center field. He's low 90s from the left side on the mound. He didn't pitch Saturday night. I want to make that clear, but that's what he is. Mm-hmm. And he didn't pitch much or at all last year, but he's pitching again for him this year. And he just hits bombs. I saw him go back to back home runs. He hit a home run to lead off the third inning. 114 miles per hour, exit velocity, 465 feet on top of their workout facility there in right center field. Mm. Next time up, he came up in the same inning, bases loaded, hit one out to like a little bit to the left of right center, more center field. But I think it was just as hot coming off the bat. It didn't go as far, but it cleared the fence by a long ways. But he leads it off. And then you got Zach Stewart, who turned down probably third, fourth round money out of the draft last year. He was in the five hole. They got another really solid bat, Nick Rodriguez, hitting third hole, just a grinder at second base with some pull side pop. So I think, long answer to your question, I'm sorry, but they present a pretty good lineup. But I didn't really get a great feel for their pitching, just because you don't know who's rolling out there. But that'll be a competitive team as well.
Missouri State always seems like they got a big bopper, a guy that you wonder, how did he not end up at a school that's a lot bigger than Springfield?
Yeah, well, the Bogenpohl guy, I guess he's from a super small school in the Boot Heel of Missouri. So kind of a hidden out guy or whatever, you know. But, I hate to say it, those guys eventually, especially with these days in the transfer portal,
they do.
Unfortunately, they may not last long. I'm not trying to predict anything. But, those guys don't remain hidden very long anymore.
Well, you have a report on Arkansas coming up?
I will, yeah. Hopefully it'll go out this week. I'm probably about half done. And then from there, it's kind of out of my hands whenever Kendall and Aaron decide to put it on the website. But, I'm over halfway through writing it up.
Well, you can find that at d1baseball.com later this week. David Seifert, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for so much for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you down the road. And we appreciate you being here with us today. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow as we continue to look forward to Arkansas and LSU this weekend at Razorback Stadium. Until then, hope we see you at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.